The NBA's West is wild. The NHL's West is wilder. And this is our wildest episode yet. With our best guest yet. This is the Sports Radio Jax. Welcome to the Jax. On the program today, we discuss Jose Canseco, Karma, the Final Four, NHL Hardware, Jackie Chan, and Shai Davidi. As always, you can listen to us live at centennialondemand.com/centennial-internet-radio, or you can download the podcast by clicking on Centennial Internet Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at SportsJax. I'm Josh Lewenberg. As always, I'm joined by Aaron Korolnik.
Hello.
And to my right is Jimmy Mangos. Wait a minute.
That's not Jimmy Mangos.
That's not Jimmy Mangos.
I'm far better looking.
Greg Hood, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for joining us, Greg.
I mean, nice to talk to you. Sorry, we're on radio, not television.
We got to ask Greg to be a last-minute replacement for Jimmy Mangos, who had attended some family matters today.
He's on assignment today.
He's on assignment. We're very confident in Greg's abilities to be a radio star, though, so no worries.
I'm glad you have confidence in me. I feel as if I have no business being here.
Oh, absolutely. With all the,
we'll see. I'll do my best, though, I promise.
So how's it going, Greg? Are you excited?
Excited to be on the show?
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah.
So in the opening, I promised the wildest episode yet. And that's actually pretty strange considering we don't have Jimmy Mangos here, who normally is in charge of the wildness. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Greg, I just want to tell you that we won't be talking about purses today, so if that's not going to work for you.
No fashion talk?
No.
I actually have that in the lineup. Is that not on your lineup?
Oh, I guess not. All right.
Let's talk about fashion.
Can
we lead with that? Fashion? So I can get off to a good start here, so I can get my feet wet?
Some jeans designs, perhaps?
Yes, maybe.
Maybe. We'll see how it goes. We'll play it by ear.
It's the Sports Radio Jax, not the Fashion Radio Jax.
If we have time, maybe at the end. Please?
So,
please.
We'll see if we can fit it in.
So the best guest that we've ever had, that I promised, is actually not Greg Hood, believe it or not. But Sportsnet's MLB insider, Shai Davidi, will be joining us in studio later on in the show, so stay tuned. If you are a baseball fan, if you are a Blue Jays fan, you would be a fool, I say, to miss this. Shai Davidi knows baseball like the back of his hand. Shai Davidi knows baseball like Greg Hood knows designer purses. Wow. I'm sorry, designer handbags. Is that right?
Messenger bags, as you should say.
Messenger
bags. I would like if you were correct, please. I'm a man, not a woman. I don't carry a purse. It's a messenger bag.
Okay.
And I don't want to go over this again. This is the last time I'll clarify myself.
I apologize, Greg.
That's all right.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I miss Jimmy.
Thank you for having me.
I kind of miss Jimmy already.
Me too.
Oh, sorry. Do you want me to be an idiot? I can be an idiot. I'm certainly capable of doing
Spitting
so.
Hot fire already in the first 5 minutes.
A little rivalry between Greg Hood and Jimmy Mangos.
I'm kidding. I love
it's
that
good. It's always good.
So Greg Hood, like Jimmy Mangos, is a bit of an icon. They like attention. That's what one thing that they share, one thing that they have in common. Another guy that has never shied away from a little media attention is Jose Canseco, who's in the news yet again over the weekend. Jose tried to pull off the old switcheroo by sending his twin brother, Ozzy Canseco, to fight a celebrity boxing match for him in Miami. What do you make of this?
Well, it's pretty funny that the fans actually at the Hard Rock Casino, where the boxing match was scheduled to be held, were able to point out that the difference between the two by their tattoos. So obviously there's other differences between the Canseco brothers. There's a pretty big weight difference, but
or the 462 home runs that Jose has hit in his major league career in comparison to zero home runs and 62 at bats.
Yeah, I guess that's fair too. Well, it's the steroids, you know, you got to put an asterisk next to those home runs.
So Ozzy wasn't on the roids?
Oh, he probably was. But isn't Jose on the Celebrity Apprentice this season?
He is, actually, and he's making quite the spectacle of himself there as well.
I'd be interested to see what Donald Trump would have to say about Jose's the little switcheroo here.
Just to define switcheroo, in case anyone isn't familiar with the old switcheroo, let's go to George Costanza for a second.
All right, I tell you what you do. You call her back and give her the itch me, huh? Pull the old switcheroo!
I think that's what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
What the hell is a gander, anyway?
It's a goose that's had the old switcheroo pulled on her.
It's always good to get some clarity from the good people over at Seinfeld.
You need more Seinfeld references on the show.
More?
More.
We average like two per episode.
No, that's not enough.
right.
That is certainly not anywhere near the amount you need.
Have either of you been watching The Celebrity Apprentice this season?
No, I spend my time watching better shows like Jersey Shore. So
I was going to say, I could drop a Jersey Shore reference and you two would be all over it. And nobody's going to give any love to The Apprentice.
Excuse me. Don't make me interrupt. But you know I don't watch Jersey Shore. I haven't watched.
I didn't know that.
I haven't watched 5 minutes of the show.
Neither have I.
You guys are missing out.
No, I'm not.
An exceptional program. Some of the finest content on television.
No.
Well, back to some fine content. Actually, Celebrity Apprentice is terrible. But a couple weeks ago, they put Jose Canseco in a dress to play a school teacher in order to win their task. And they won the task. And then last week, they had Jose Canseco pose as a homosexual. Not a joke. Pose as a homosexual in a video phone ad to be like the punchline at the end of the story. He's supposed to, there's a guy, he's on the video phone, he wants to introduce his parents to his fiance. Jose Canseco shows up as the fiance.
Oof.
Dressed very provocatively.
Wait, so
and
but
he
was dressed as a male. As a male, like,
yeah.
You're saying he dressed as a homosexual.
Correct. I think I have a clip of that as well. You can't really appreciate it unless you see it. I don't have
I would like to see it.
I have the sound clip.
Can I look
you
it up on
hear
Google?
The sound clip? No.
Okay, yeah, play me the sound.
Okay.
I want to introduce you to my new fiancé, honey, Pablo.
Hola.
Of course, Jose Canseco is playing Pablo.
Pablo, wow. Pablo
they won the
Canseco.
Task.
This story is amazing for so many reasons. Obviously, the Jose Ozzy. The switcheroo is just a classic thing, especially in the world of boxing. Like, Jose, man up and fight your fights. Don't have your brother step
I thought he was
you.
Training to become a mixed martial arts fighter. Was he not? Is he not? One of the two? I thought I was almost positive I heard this. Well, this was, you know, on his Twitter account, you know.
Jose Canseco was on Twitter?
I thought he was he not? I read this.
Oh. I have him on Twitter. I don't know if it's actually him, though.
Yeah, you never know what's going on Twitter these days. Actually, we're going to talk a little about some Twitter fiascos a little later in the show. Very exciting stuff.
A little bit, yeah. So another guy that normally doesn't shy away from the spotlight is LeBron James. But he did shy away from the spotlight at the beginning of the game when he was a no-show for the intros. When his name was announced, the boos rang down. LeBron was nowhere to be found.
Do you know where he was?
Any idea? Washroom.
Yeah,
oh, the washroom.
That's
of
what
course.
That's what he said he was. But pretty much this is one of the most cowardly acts I've ever heard.
Cowardly?
Of.
That's a load of crap.
This is like the fans pay their money in Cleveland to come boo you. That's the only reason they're there. They want to scream obscenities at LeBron.
Be a man, take your booze.
Take your booze, and that just personifies LeBron. He's just a cowardly man.
Boo!
That was short.
Punk. LeBron's
that was
a punk.
Abbreviated.
Boo! Yeah, it was
a little abbreviated. You need to do better.
Straight
editing
to
job.
The point. I'm sorry. I just bought Adobe Audition recently.
pricey.
My
price
goodness.
Tag.
What a waste of money.
I'm eating Kraft dinner for the next, like, month.
No more me by me, eh?
No more me by me.
Wait a minute. You eat Kraft dinner for the next month? Like every meal? 3 meals a day?
I normally only eat 2 meals a day.
Okay. We're in the same boat. I do that by choice, though.
That's nice, Greg.
I don't do it out of necessity.
Nearly 4 months ago, LeBron James made his return to Cleveland and beat the Cavs 118-90, scoring 38 points. He came into yesterday's game saying, "Can't get no worse than it was December 2nd. I know that for a fact." Do you, LeBron? Do you know that? It got worse.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe the reaction wasn't as bad from the Cleveland fans, but Cavs win. LeBron had a triple-double, of course. LeBron played well, but his team didn't show up, just like LeBron didn't show up in the intros. Did this game just mean more to the Cavs than it did to the Heat?
I think definitely. You know, actually, for me personally, this might have been one of the greatest games I've ever watched. You just felt an allegiance to the city of Cleveland there. Everyone was... There was such an electricity in there when Cleveland went up so hot, up so many points on Miami, you know. Like guys like Ryan Hollins beefing with Wade and LeBron and Alonzo G, Anthony Parker, just all balling out. All balling out against Miami, their hated rivals. It was just a spectacle to behold. I loved every minute of it.
I found it hilarious to watch because these fans were celebrating like they had won the NBA championship. This is a 15-58 team. They won the championship.
Pretty much. This was their
this
NBA
was their
championship.
Season.
Yeah, beating LeBron in the Heat is equivalent to winning any playoff series.
It almost reminded me of the Raptors' inaugural season when they beat the Bulls, and they were just terrible that season. But for that one night, everything just came together, and the Raptors haven't had that moment this season. They haven't had a moment like the Cavs had last year. Last night.
It's very true. Did you see Floyd Money Mayweather bet on Cleveland last night?
Really?
Took him by the spread. I think it was plus
12.5.
12.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a ballsy call.
Do you know what Cleveland Mayweather was paying off on the money line?
Must have been fat. I think Greg was going to bet it, no?
I wanted to. I didn't even look, actually. No. I saw the hockey games on the board and didn't. I have a quick question, though. Are you familiar with the city of Cleveland?
Very much so.
So shouldn't this come as no surprise to you that they were this excited?
They got to take what they can get.
Exactly. I know this. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan.
Cleveland Browns
Drew
fan.
Carey
north of the
Drew
border.
Drew Carey walks into the building, they get a standing ovation. So small successes are celebrated there.
Absolutely.
There's nothing to be tremendously excited about. So when something like this happens, come on. Give him a break.
The Heat are 41-14 since their victory over the Cavs on December 2nd. Should they be concerned about this, or is it just a case of overlooking a terrible team in spite of the circumstance?
Yeah, that's probably what it was. But I'm surprised that Miami couldn't even get up for this game. Obviously, it's not as hyped as the previous game, LeBron's first return to Cleveland. But I just wonder how many of the Miami Heat players were crying after this game. I'd say over six. They definitely were shedding some tears.
Overall, I'd say this was a meaningless game. But a lot of the reasons why the Heat ended up losing are reasons that we've stated in the past as to why this team may not be able to live up to expectations come playoff time. Chris Bosh was soft. He was terrible last night.
Awful.
The bench of Miami was outscored 32-6. So these are all issues that these are not new issues. We've discussed these before. We'll continue to discuss them again. They're going to be a factor come playoff time, no?
Oh, absolutely. Bosh was an absolute joke last night. Dude was softer than toilet paper. Guys like Ryan Hollins and J.J. Hickson were actually abusing Chris Bosh. Like, he wasn't even there. May as well have been a 5-foot-nothing white boy standing there in the paint against those guys. It was a joke.
Oh, yeah. Apologize. Jeez. I'll tell the white people out there. Come on now.
All right. Apologize on behalf of all the white people out
there. How important of a stat is plus minus in basketball? I know some people like it. Some people
very
just
very unimportant.
And sometimes it's important, though.
I hate it.
It speaks a little
Chris
bit.
Chris Bosh was awful last time. I'm just looking at these stats. 5-for-14.
Terrible.
What was his plus minus?
Minus 24. Worst on the squad.
Chris Bosh is terrible. I hate Chris Bosh.
Missed a couple key free throws down the stretch.
0-for-2.
We'll talk a little bit more NBA coming up later in the show, but there was some more basketball on over the last 7 days, I believe, of the NCAA variety. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I believe there is some March Madness still lingering in the tail end of March here.
Now, before we dive into this headfirst, obviously, why don't we send it back over to our NCAA correspondent, Giannis Bunkus, who is still in the field. He's been in the field for like the last 3 weeks. He hasn't left the field.
He loves his March Madness.
Loves the field. We're going to go to Giannis for this week's 60 Seconds of Madness. What up, y'all? It's your boy Jay Bunk, and I'm back with another 60 Seconds of Madness for you. Oh, what happened? Oh, I called out the Mormons to beat Florida? That was a mistake. Alex Tyes had something to say about that with his 19 points, 17 rebounds. Craziness. I didn't like that Walker's last shot there, but you got to give it to the guy that's carried them there all season long. What else we got? VCU? Oh, baby, I love me some VCU action. One of only 3 11 seeds to ever make it to the Final Four on the backs of one Joey Rodriguez. Love VCU. Like him next week. Other on to the other side of the bracket, we have Kentucky and UConn. A shout out to these two great hell coaches, Jim Calhoun and John Calipari. These two are epic coaches leading their teams yet to yet another Final Four, if you can believe it. But I'm sorry, Jimmy. I got Johnny in this one. I like Kentucky. I like Harrelson. I like Brandon Knight. I just think it's been a little bit too long of a run for the UConn Huskies, who have had no doubt an epic run. But Kemba, Lamb, time to take a seat on the bench and watch the Kentucky SEC boys. I always forget to adjust the volume when Giannis comes on. I always forget that his voice is in a different
hemisphere.
In a different hemisphere than us normal folk.
Is it his voice or just his unbridled enthusiasm?
It's probably a little
unbridled.
Wow.
Love it. Thank you, Giannis.
Thank you as always. Great job.
I don't know if madness is appropriate enough. Like, it may have to escalate to beyond madness. Like,
what's beyond madness?
What's the next
step? Let me pull up the thesaurus.
Some antonyms out there, perhaps?
The Urban Dictionary?
That is insanity? Which is worse?
Madness and insanity.
Dementia?
Dementia.
March dementia. Yeah, that'll go over real well in the newspaper.
What about psychosis?
Cricket?
Let's stick with madness.
You want a cricket?
Let's stick with madness.
Come on. That was a cool reference. You never played Revenge, the video game for N64? Psychosis, the Lucha Libre? Am I the only wrestling
fan? I bring out the N64 every now and then, but I'm more of a Mario Party type of guy.
Oh,
I'm Mario Kart. You guys ever want to go head-to-head in Mario Kart?
Let's bring it.
Master,
I hear you. Bring it on.
I'll do it.
Why don't we preview the Final Four a little bit?
Okay, let's do it.
Let's start off with Kentucky, shall we?
Kentucky, very high-quality basketball team.
How impressed have you been with Brandon Knight so far in this tournament?
Oh, Brandon Knight's been great. Guys, but I think what can be said most about Brandon Knight is his performance in the clutch. The guy's hit two game-winning shots so far in the tournament, had big games against, most recently against UNC. But he also had a few stinkers. His game against Princeton, he only scored 2 points, and against Ohio State, scored 9, although he did hit the game-winner. But I think he certainly helped his draft stock with his performance so far in the tournament, looking like a go-to guy. I mean, a guy he kind of reminds me of is Drew Holiday, who came out of UCLA. That's actually the NBADraft.net reference there. But, I think Brandon Knight certainly has a nice potential as far as a pro career goes.
It's hard to call him a point guard, but he's shown to be a talented player, regardless of what position they slot him at. And he's definitely, that's why I think Drew Holiday is actually a very good comparison as far as his ability to be a combo guard in the NBA, perhaps. How about that victory over Ohio State? Pretty impressive.
Oh, it's a great game. But I think what's even more so than Knight was their team defense.
Absolutely.
I think they held them to 32% from the field. 328 from the field, like 32.8%?
Yes.
Okay, I got you. So that was incredible. They were like stuffing the paint, and Ohio State wasn't able to get going at all offensively. That spelled the end to Jared Sullinger's freshman season.
21 points, 16 rebounds for Sullinger, so he still had a pretty good game, but the defense did a good job of stopping him from getting others involved. And like you mentioned, the shooting percentage as well. So Kentucky's defense has stood out for sure in addition to Knight. Let's go to Sullinger for a second and his decision to stay at Ohio State. Can I read a quote for you quickly?
Of course.
"I'm going to be an Ohio State Buckeye next year. Winning is that important to me."
Hashtag winning.
"I don't like losing. This is not what I came here to do. This is not why I'm here, to sit here and see my seniors cry. I came here to win a national championship, to see them celebrate. I wanted to share tears of joy with these guys. I'm a man of my word. I don't want to change my mind for anybody. This is what I want. This is where I'm happy. I'm happy being an Ohio State Buckeye."
I'm getting some tingles down my spine there. That's a really emotional speech.
Respect.
Yeah, I respect serious that. Respect. That's like uncharacteristic of today's college basketball player. Usually
it's
one and done. Guy comes in for his freshman season and bolts to the NBA. I do think Sullinger could have been a top five pick in the draft.
For sure.
But I'm a little
best pure big man, I think, in college basketball.
Yeah, Derek Williams, both pretty solid. Derek Williams might be more of a three than a four, but I don't know, but Ohio State's losing a bunch of their seniors. Lighty and Diebler and Lauderdale are all leaving school after this year. They're all graduating. So, and also their recruiting class is a little on the weekend compared to usual Ohio State recruiting classes. So I don't know if you'll see Ohio State be as dominant as they were last year. But anytime you have a guy of Jared Sullinger's quality, you're going to be a good team regardless.
Is this a foolish decision, Greg, to stay in college one more year when you could be a top five pick in the NBA draft next year?
Personally, I'm not a fan of it. To be honest, I shouldn't say it. Scrap that last line. And I'm always honest, as you'll see in my Mangos Minute. But I think that basketball players, I know now they just instituted the fact that they have to stay for 1 year minimum, right? Correct? I think it should be more like the NFL, where it should be minimum 3 years. I don't see why they should be allowed out after 1 year. That's just my opinion. Correct me if I'm wrong. You can debate with me. I have no real premise for this, but
yeah,
I'm just saying.
I do think that's an interesting debate. Obviously, you see teams like VCU and Butler, which we'll get to later, who have developed their players over the course of the program. Guys like Shelvin Mack and Matt Howard have been with the program for years now, and that shows with the program's development. But then again, you have teams like Kentucky, who, even looking at last year, had five freshmen drafted in the first round with Cousins, Wall, Bledsoe, Patrick Patterson, and Daniel Orton. Wow, I nailed them all.
Well done.
But Kentucky this year could lose Brandon Knight. But again, Kentucky does have a great recruiting class coming in this coming year. But it does speak to the new generation of college basketball. It's all about recruiting. You keep a guy for a year for the most part, or the top recruits anyways for a year, and you let him go. You just got to keep funneling new guys in every year. That's By the end, you see the development of programs is also important with teams like VCU and Butler.
Worst case scenario, let's say Sullinger gets injured next year. That could, be a disaster.
It's a risk. But
it's a huge risk.
It's a testament to his competitive fire. He doesn't want to go out in a game like he did. And this was Ohio State, was a team that many looked at as the favorite in the tournament. They destroyed everyone in the first two rounds. And then they ran into Kentucky, and unfortunately they weren't able to overcome that there's Kentucky stifling defense. But I it's going to be interesting to see Sullinger again next year. He's going to be a stud again, of course. And I think he could be a top three pick next year if he stays healthy. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be.
Let's move on to their opponent, number three-seeded Connecticut. Will the Kentucky defense be able to slow down Kemba Walker?
I don't know if anyone can slow down Kemba Walker at this point. This guy's averaging 27-6 in the tournament, I believe, something of that nature. The guy's been an absolute beast. But, at some point, you think Kentucky's got it. UConn has to get tired.
They've had 9 victories in the last 19 days.
This is an unprecedented run of games in a short amount of time. And Kemba's just got to be taxed at this point. He's got to be exhausted. He's not a huge guy, not a physical beast. But you never know, man. You stay hot for a month on end. Kemba can rest when they're hoisting that national championship.
Has he been the best player in this tournament so far?
Yeah, I'd certainly say him and Derek Williams have been the most impressive players in the tournament. Kemba has just been a one-man show. I guess Jimmer, for the time he was in, was also impressive. But I guess that also speaks to the lack of a supporting cast for those guys for the most part. They're able to shine more than others.
Kemba has had a lot of help from sidekick Jeremy Lamb, but you mentioned Derek Williams and the Kemba Walker and Derek Williams showdown. What was it, last week, a couple weeks ago?
Yep.
That was something else. Kemba, 36 points versus San Diego State, and then he was 20-7, I believe, against Arizona?
I believe that's correct.
Derek Williams, is this a potential number one pick in the draft this year?
I don't know about number one. I guess it also depends on what team is drafting that high. If it's Cleveland, I don't even know if they really have a need for a point guard like a Kyrie Irving, who I see as the best player out there. Guy's a stud. But Cleveland has Baron Davis, who's playing pretty good these days. Ramon Sessions, also a good player. So I don't know if drafting Kyrie Irving would be most prudent for them. I could see them taking Harrison Barnes, but I'd probably have Derek Williams ranked as the third best prospect out there. But then again, a team's needs could overlook that ranking system there.
UConn, Kentucky, which team is better coached?
Well, that's tough. Those are two legendary coaches in Calhoun and Calipari. But I got to give the nod to Calipari. Just for what he's doing with the defensive, stopping Ohio State, an offensive juggernaut for the whole year. But, of course, Calhoun, also a legend in his own right, so that's going to be an excellent, excellent matchup.
Who's moving on?
I'm going to go with UConn. I'm going to stick with my boy Matty Hayes, Kemba Walker. Shout out to Matt Hayes, who was victorious in the Centennial Sports Journalism Bracket. And, I think we'll stick with UConn here. How about you, Greg?
Well, I'm going to have to go with UConn simply because they eliminated my pick to win the tournament, San Diego State. I took maybe it wasn't too educated, but by the looks of it right now, nothing is educated.
That's a good point.
What number? Very good point. No number ones, right? So I guess it wasn't that bad of a pick, but they eliminated my pick to win. And I have to say that not that I know many of the logistics of basketball, but I thought that they were pretty well coached in that game against San Diego. They did a good job mixing up their defenses, and they kind of screwed them up near the end of the game. So, one more quick question. Who's going to, Kemba Walker, who's going to be guarding him when they play Kentucky?
Probably Brandon Knight.
Brandon Knight. And how good is his defense?
It's okay.
It's been okay. Good so far.
It's okay. There's okay. a little tilt of the head there.
He's a solid defender. Okay. Sometimes has some defensive lapses as a young guy like Knight does, but I think he's definitely bigger than Kemba Walker and have an advantage in that respect.
I'm going to go with UConn then.
For the record, this is only the second time in tournament expansion era that there's been no number one seeds in the Final Four. The only other time, 2006, George Mason.
Ooh, George Mason.
The George Mason year. I'm going to take Kentucky. I hate you both.
Okay.
they've proven themselves defensively. Like we said, Brandon Knight's been amazing. And I think UConn's tired. I think this is their time.
You got to figure they're due to have a down game at some point. But they've had some time off now to recuperate a little
bit. If and when they prove me wrong, I will eat crow.
I'll find some crow for you to eat.
The Giannis Bunkus line? Eat crow?
Yes.
I never heard of that
the
line
Bunkus
until I met Giannis. So.
Oh, never heard of eat crow?
That's a popular expression. Never heard it in my life.
Just 0.4% of the brackets filled out in the ESPN Tournament Challenge had VCU in the Elite 8. Just 192 of those 5.9 million brackets had VCU and Butler in the Final Four, yet here they are.
Wow. Defying the odds. You never know what's going to happen in this dementia-filled tournament.
Has VCU been the most impressive team so far, defying the odds?
I guess you'd have to say that they would be the most impressive team. They don't really have a track record in the tournament like Butler did last year. Kate went to the Final Four, although they did lose Gordon Hayward and Veasley. I think that's what his name was, Veasley. He was a good player. But, Shaka Smart has become a coaching celebrity these days. Supposedly getting some offers to coach some more high-profile programs. But, that full-court press they were running against Kansas was very effective. Giannis's boy Rodriguez was sick, and Skeen had a nice double-double. It was just a joy to watch, a juggernaut. Just like a lot like Cleveland beating Miami last night. That's kind of what the VCU over Kansas reminded me of. It was great to see the underdog overcome.
Offensively, they've looked fantastic all tournament. I think they dropped 94 points earlier on in the tournament. But defensively, they really made a statement against Kansas as well. Markieff Morris had 8 turnovers, I believe it was. So they were putting pressure on the Morris twins. They were putting pressure on this number one seed Kansas team. And they can't be underestimated at this point, even against a team like Butler. Why don't we talk about Butler a little bit?
Butler, it's a quality school.
Can you underestimate them at this point after last season's Final Four?
This is 2 years in a row, isn't it? 2 years in a row for a small school like this.
What
seed were they last year?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not certain, but did you know that VCU is actually the largest school in terms of student population of the Final Four teams?
Bigger than Kentucky.
Bigger than Kentucky, bigger than UConn. That's something that really surprised me. But Butler's a school of 5,000 students compared to the other schools, which are over 25,000, 30,000. So.
They've been the upset kings over the last couple years. My question is, now that they're most likely the favorite in this game, do they lose their fight?
No, Butler's going to beat VCU. That's my prediction. You can put it on the board.
Put on the board.
Yes.
Greg, Butler or VCU?
I have been impressed with VCU's offense, as we have stated already. Quite impressive. I actually picked them to win their play-in game, but I did not see this coming.
You didn't see 5 more wins.
Did not see it coming. But I'm going to have to go with Butler because this is the second year in a row. This is no fluke. This is a quality basketball team. And I see them, not only do I see them winning this game, I see them winning the whole thing.
Likewise.
If it's a close game, Butler will win. It's just that simple. They've proven it over and over again. Across the board, I think we're going to have to go with Butler for this one. Agreed?
It's a rarity. We all come to an agreement here on Sports Radio.
Huge rarity.
But, first time for everything.
Jimmy normally mess that up? Does he normally make bogus predictions?
Well, actually, it's Josh who usually goes against the grain a lot of the time.
Oh, wait a minute. I listen every week.
It's appreciated, though. You got to have some dissension amongst the ranks. You know, you don't want everyone having the same opinion.
Yeah, fair enough.
Are you hating on my LaMarcus Aldridge for MVP pick? Is that what this is?
A little bit, yeah. But, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, except when it comes to LaMarcus Aldridge MVP votes.
Coming up, we'll talk about the NBA final 8 games of the regular season. We'll talk about the NHL, and we'll be joined in studio by MLB insider of Rogers Sportsnet, Shai Davidi. But first, a segment that's very near and dear to our heart, the Mangos Minute. Mango, 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 mango. Mango, 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 mango. Last week on the Mangos Minute.
And then one guy's like, what about Jimmy? And they all laugh. Ha ha, Jimmy can't get a girl. He doesn't talk to girls. And before you know it, what happens? I go to that party. I see that girl, some Polish girl. Her name's Adida. You know, I picked her up. I can't, explain too much details what happened after that, but I'll tell you, that's the day when Jimmy Mangos was born.
So wait, the Polish girl, her name was Adida?
I've been looking her up on Facebook. I can't locate her.
Creeper? Can't locate
her? You typed Adidas into Google and you can find
her? How do you spell that? Please, enlighten me.
We'll call Jimmy Mangos after the program. We'll try to track him down.
As you know, Jimmy Mangos is not with us today.
Uh-oh.
So, I present to you the Mangos Minute featuring Gregory Hood. Greg, you excited?
I don't know. I don't know if I'll be as humorous as Jimmy. And it kind of put me on the spot, so I don't know if what I'll come up with will be all right for you guys or your audience. I'm not sure.
We have faith in you, Greg.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
But
let's
first,
try it. What is it?
But first, before we get to this, I got some breaking news. Jackie Chan is still alive.
Oh,
breaking
God,
news.
Thank God.
Thank God. Yesterday, a bunch of pranksters on Twitter tweeted a false report that Jackie Chan had died. Of course, he did not. And with April Fool's Day coming up and these false reports of Jackie Chan's demise, Greg, I ask you to tell us about the biggest lies you've ever told or the biggest prank you've ever pulled. Please, spare us no detail. Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to spare you details so I don't get castrated or anything like that by former girlfriends or lady friends, whatever you want to call them. But so I think I might have to leave those details out. So I'm just going to go with, in terms of pranks, in my latter years of high school, this wasn't just subjected to exclusively on April Fool's Day. I know it's coming up. But I was a pretty veteran egger. It was I'd spend a lot of time doing it. I'm talking about like 5 days a week, maybe five nights a week, you know? Not just like, oh, haha, we're drunk, let's go hike. This was an obsession. And we had one friend who I coincidentally still have on Facebook, despite the fact that I deleted over half my friends. Still have him on Facebook. So if he's listening, I apologize. I'm not going to say his name, just in case. But we used to egg his house every single night of the week. Every single night. And he has this, I'm going to have to leave out details, but his father was not happy about this. Really not happy. And he used to, this guy would come to school and he'd be like, oh, my dad set up cameras last night. We're going to catch these guys. We're going to catch them. We're going to get them. They're like, oh, man, look out. I hope you get them. Didn't faze us one bit. We had the egging crew. We would all convene at our one friend's house and buy like so many boxes of eggs and just head out at night. That's it. That's like, as far as pranks, I think that's the only thing I've done is like just egg excessive amounts. We had a plan where we had a whole map of the city, and we were planning on egging every street in the city.
And we're back. I'd like to welcome one of the newest members of the Rogers Sportsnet family, MLB insider and ruggedly handsome professor at Centennial College, who's responsible for our marks, Shai Davidi. Welcome, Shai.
That intro is a little bit awkward. I'm not sure. You know, you had me until ruggedly handsome. Not that I disagree.
Well, I got to grease the wheels a little bit.
You know.
You probably get that a lot, though, so.
Yeah, usually from women, though, and yeah, I'm a little bit... Yeah.
I was going to say, that intro wasn't too flattering, was it?
No.
Flattering enough?
It was, just perfect. Not going to help your marks, but...
Oh, well, can't hurt a guy for trying.
It's good. Right? Good try.
You can try.
Well, you wrote your first article, you wrote your first column for Sportsnet at the beginning of March, so it's been about a month now. How are they treating you over there so far?
It's been great. It's a remarkable opportunity. Rogers is a really exciting place to be right now. The great thing about it is that it gets to focus on baseball. Like, I had the privilege with the Canadian Press for years of covering a variety of different sports, and that has been excellent. It was a remarkable journey. But it's nice to be able to kind of focus in and you know, hit the sport that I love the most pretty hard. And we're going to be aggressive. We're going to have a lot of great stuff going on the website all year. And to be part of the broadcast, too, is also another fantastic opportunity. So it's been an awesome first month, and I'm ready for the regular season to start so we can get at her.
Well, if there's any issues with Rogers, you always have a seat here at the Sports Radio Jacks.
I don't know if Jimmy Mangos will appreciate that offer.
Well, he'll understand. Shai, I wanted to talk about an issue that's a big debate amongst Blue Jay fans and has been in this booth as well, and that's, of course, Jose Bautista. I'm of the opinion that Jose is going to have a pretty big season, maybe not as big as last year, but I know Josh isn't as optimistic. What is a reasonable expectation for fans to have for Bautista? Is 35 to home runs possible?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think the interesting part of the debate is, you know, based on last season, what is a reasonable expectation for Jose Bautista now? And I think, you know, given the talent the guy has, if he becomes a 25 to 35 home run hitter, becomes a guy who, you know, knocks in between 90 and 100 plus runs, is a guy who continues to walk and see pitches, continues to provide plus defense in right field, or as it's going to start this season, at third base, as well as the terrific clubhouse presence that he is, and he maintains that leadership role that he has, I think he's going to bring them great value to that contract. And I think, you know, in some quarters, if he doesn't hit 40 plus home runs, it's going to be considered a failure, or that he's going to be considered not legitimate or a bad year. And all those things, I think, will be unfair to him because, you know, not very few players, only a small handful, have hit 50 home runs in a season. That was a magical year, and to expect him to repeat that, I think, is unfair. But I think, you know, based on the talent, the career trajectory, even when he was a prospect coming up, and one of the reasons so many teams were interested in him is because they all saw the potential that he had. You know, between 25 to 35 home runs is a reasonable expectation, I think, for him. And I think if he provides that, he'll be giving the Blue Jays reasonable value on the contract that he has.
You mentioned his defensive switch to third this year. Do you see Bautista sticking at third for the bulk of the year, or is this just a stopgap before Brett Laurie comes up? Maybe a different option at third?
Yeah, no, I don't think this is permanent. Part of that will be determined on Brett Laurie's timeline. Part of that will be determined on what they're able to do with Juan Rivera. You know, I mean, the interesting thing is, you know, based on what's happened in the American League East during the offseason, you know, the Yankees don't look as certain to be as good as they were last year. The Rays certainly look like a team that could take a step back. Boston's probably the favorite to win that division right now. So if you look at it, there appears to be a bit of an opening. So if a lot of things break right for the Blue Jays and they're contenders in the season, Juan Rivera is probably going to be a factor in that. He's a veteran guy. He's proven. He's got a decent offensive track record. He's a guy who can contribute with the bat. So, you know, you might want to leave him in right field and maybe push back Brett Laurie a little bit and not rush him. By the other side of the token, you know, if the things don't go quite right, the pitching staff, some of the younger guys take step backwards a little bit, you know, maybe, you know, that creates an opening to for you to move Rivera and bring Brett Laurie up and kind of let them get some of their, you know, learning mistakes out of the way this season. So I think it's one of those things that can kind of go either way right now. And depending what happens during the season, I think that will kind of dictate to them what happens in that regard.
We talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago. One factor that will be big for the Jays this year are a couple players that are joining Bautista in the infield, a couple players that had breakout seasons in 2009 that took maybe a little bit of a step back last year in Aaron Hill and Adam Lind. Do you see those two having bounce back years in 2011?
Yeah, and you're right. I think they're kind of instrumental to how the team does because in Batista's case alone, you know, Adam Lind is the guy pegged to be the cleanup hitter, and he's the guy who's going to provide protection. And, you know, one of the things that kind of got lost on people last year is that, you know, Vernon Wells, you know, kind of his numbers tailed off towards the middle parts of the season, and that's because Bautista was, you know, sucking up all the RBIs in front of him. But pitchers knew that the way Vernon was hitting, you know, you can't pitch around Jose and put another guy on for Vernon to deal with. So they're going to need another guy like that behind Jose this year. Otherwise, Jose will just walk the whole year and won't get much to hit. So I think Lind is important in that regard. But on the whole, you know, they've lost a lot of power. And part of the way they believe they can replace that power is with bounce back years from Hill and Lind. And, you know, it's great to be able to create offense, and Rajai Davis does that. You know, he's going to help them in that regard. Corey Patterson and Scott Podsednik, eventually, if they end up on the bench, are guys who can help in that regard. But, you know, you need some guys who can thump the ball in the American League East, too. So, you know, if Hill and Lynn don't provide that thump, that lineup suddenly looks a lot shorter.
Talk about guys who are going to need to provide some power for the Jays this year. A few guys like that are our good friend Jimmy Mangos is really high on this year, Travis Schneider and J.P. Arencibia. Now, obviously, there's a lot of pressure on these guys to live up to what the organization feels they have a lot of potential in. How much patience do you think John Farrell is going to have in these guys if they struggle out of the gate? How long of a leash do Arencibia and Snyder have?
I think both of them get very long leashes, particularly Arencibia, because, I mean, really, what other options are they going to have at catcher, right? I mean, if you believe that this is a guy who's got the potential to be a starter, you're going to have to let him get through his growing pains at some point. I think this is the year for them to do it. And, you know, I think offensively, might not be as crucial for JP as what he does behind the plate and how he handles the pitching staff. To me, a successful year for him will be reasonable offensive numbers, and that may be, you know, 260, 270 batting average, you know, 15 homers, kind of in that range. If he can do that and be good defensively, that's a tremendous season for him, because that's kind of where all the pressure is on him. They want him to handle the pitching staff. That's the priority.
Joined in studio by Sportsnet Shai Davidi. Shai, you wrote a piece on Brandon Morrow earlier this month about the progress he's made over the last 12 months. And last season, the organization sat him down early, and I think the general consensus was that if this guy ever plays a full season and puts everything together, he could be as good as anyone in the AL, in the majors, really. Should Blue Jays fans be concerned about Morrow now that he's going to be starting off the season on the DL?
I think not. Necessarily. I mean, yeah, it's scary, forearm injury. You know, everyone kind of, or some people might think back to 2009 when Jesse Litch had a forearm injury and it turned into Tommy John surgery. So I think some people might make that connection. But to me, what I took to be a pretty hopeful sign in that regard is the way Morrow didn't seem thrilled at the prospect of starting the season on the DL. You know, he was a bit surprised, he didn't really want to. And, you know, if he was worried about it, or if he felt like it was something that was a bit more beyond what's normally entailed with pitching, then I think you wouldn't have heard the same kind of protestation, and then that would have been, to me, a bit more concerning. But it seemed that he really believes this is minor. So, you know, at this point, we got to take everyone at their word, and it's just going to be a one-start kind of thing for now.
In addition to Morrow starting the year on the DL, he's going to be joined by Frank Francisco and Octavio Dotel. Now, John Farrell has come out and said that John Rauch is going to start the season as the closer. How do you see the bullpen shaking out once everyone is back to full health?
Yeah, I think that's an area that's really kind of uncertain. There's a lot of kind of temporary roles right now. Everyone's kind of getting bumped up a little bit. And I think once those two guys get back, everything's going to have to kind of shake out a little bit. But to me, the most interesting part of that is what's going to happen at closer, because if John Rauch is doing a good job, you know, you can't just take it away from him, you know, because the guy who was supposed to do it in spring training, Frank Francisco, didn't earn it. So how can you take the job from him and give it to him? So that being said, the stage is kind of set for him. If he has one bad outing or a couple bad outings in a row, then you give it back to Frank Francisco. So that, to me, is the least settled part of this team, and I think the bullpen that they started off with at the beginning of April might look fairly different by the beginning of May.
Shai, you spoke of the powerhouses in the AL East earlier, and I know many Blue Jays fans in the city are kind of down on the Jays and their chance to compete in this division just based on how things have gone down the last couple of years. But you grew up in an era where the Blue Jays were legitimate contenders in this division for pretty much a decade. Do you believe that they can get back to that sometime soon?
I believe it's possible. I mean, I think the whole thought process that the organization operates under has changed so dramatically under Alex Anthopoulos, to the point where, you know, before the disparity in payrolls was almost became a crutch, whereas now there's a plan in place to justify spending at least the level the Red Sox are at, if not the level the Yankees are at. And I think what the Tampa Bay Rays have showed, that if you draft and develop wisely and you take the right risks and are able to be right some of the time, you know, there's that book now, The Extra 2% out by Jonah Carey, a Canadian guy, kind of looks at how in every transaction they look to get a 52-48 edge in the deal, and by being 2% better in every little aspect, they can kind of overcome that. I think the Blue Jays are able to do that. The one difference is if they are able to build their system the way the Rays have, they'll be able to sustain it longer because they'll have more money available to them to retain their star players. So Carl Crawford doesn't get to free agency if he's a Blue Jay under that system, and I think that is what seems to be, for me, reason for optimism for Blue Jays fans, is that there's a longer view to overcoming the Yankees and the Red Sox than there has been in a long, long time.
Shia, here at the Sports Radio Jacks, we often like to discuss issues about fantasy baseball. And seeing as you are the MLB insider for Sportsnet, I was hoping maybe you have some names you could share with us, some guys you have pegged for some breakout seasons.
Well, it's actually interesting. This is the first year I'm not going to be in a baseball pool in a long, long time. So I haven't been studying it as closely as I usually do. But in terms of guys who are due for a breakout, it's interesting. I think Desmond Jennings, a guy who everyone's kind of talking about with the Rays, I think you know, you hear a lot of nice things about him, and you think that's a guy who can make an impact and maybe give you some speed. And everyone's kind of always looking for stolen bases. Wow, I really haven't thought this through at all.
Do you have a World Series prediction for us?
A World Series? I don't even have a World Series prediction. I've been kind of I generally try to avoid predictions, even though everyone always asks for them. I think, you know, off the bat, Boston Philadelphia strikes me as
safe choice.
Likely. Yeah, it's a very safe choice, but I mean, you just look at Boston's roster. I don't know how that doesn't happen for them, even if some guys don't have good years.
Health, you know, is key for them, as we saw last year.
But even still, you know, I mean, I think they're just so deep that they're going to be able to overcome a lot of injuries. And, you know, as long as Jenks get back to form and Papelbon can get back to form, I love that back end of the bullpen with Bard too. That's it's a pretty frightening way to close out a game. So, and again, with the Phillies, they're just so deep. And Dominic Brown, for, you know, his name should be out there for fantasy players, but he's a guy that I've had people rave to me about since he was a kid.
He's going
to
be starting off the season on the DL as well.
Yeah, right? Yep. Exactly. But he's a guy that so many people think big things of and think highly of, that he might be a guy that be worth, you know, stuffing on your DL for a few weeks and then kind of picking him up there.
Now that the season is underway, what can we expect to see from you at Sportsnet over the next few months?
Well, I mean, the great part about this job is that it's a new job, so we're going to be it's going to be evolving as we progress. We're going to be throwing some things at the wall, seeing what sticks, but, you know, there's going to be kind of regular game coverage or regular, you know, stories and features, a lot of content for the website. We'll be doing some fan chats. We might be doing some other neat stuff on the website as well, which we're still kind of planning out. And I'll be part on the broadcast here and there in a variety of different roles, pregame and perhaps some postgame too. So, you know, it's going to be a really exciting season, and I think we're going to get some pretty good content. So, you know, definitely stay tuned, and we'll try to provide some value for fans who check us out.
Looking forward to it, Shai. Keep up with Shai Davidi all season at sportsnet.ca, and don't forget to follow him on Twitter as well, at Shai Davidi. Shai, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. My pleasure, guys.
There's plenty more Jacks to come, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Wicked, wicked wild, wicked wild, wicked, wicked wild, wild west. Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider. No, you don't want nada, none of this. Gunning this, brother running this, Buffalo soldier. Look, it's like I told you, any damsel that's in distress be out of that dress when she meet Jim West. Rough neck, so go check the lawn to buy. Watch your step, we'll flex and get a hold in your side. Swallow your pride, don't let your lip react. You don't wanna see my hand where my hip be at. With Artemis from the start of this, running the game, James West, taming the West. So remember the name. Great insight, as always, from Roger Sportsnet, Shai Davidi.
He is the insider.
You know what? He is regularly handsome. Don't.
Too much, Greg.
Do not. No. You said it first. This is not me saying that. You said it.
Oh. Uh-oh. Where do we go from here?
Whatever. I'm never coming on the show again. You guys are jerks.
How about the NBA Western Conference? There's no easy way to segue that.
Yeah, I guess you just make do with what you have, I guess.
Oh, well, Spurs are struggling a little bit the last couple of weeks. I believe they've lost, what is it, 4 in a row now?
Yeah, they're struggling a little bit. That's the Portland last night.
Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, all injured. Does this team lose their spot as the top seed in the West?
I think the most important part for the Spurs is being healthy going into the playoffs. And if that means sitting out guys like Parker, Ginobili, Duncan, of course, who's down with the ankle injury. I think Antonio McDyess also sat out of their last game. The most important part for the Spurs is being healthy coming into the playoffs. If that means sitting the guys out, so be it. The games now aren't obviously as important as the games that are going into the playoffs. So obviously health, top concern for the Spurs.
Lakers are 3.5 games behind the Spurs. There's 8 games left, I believe, for both teams. Lakers have won 7 in a row. Things are finally clicking for this team that people have been all over this year. Are things finally coming together? Well, I think they might catch the Spurs.
It's going to be close.
3.5 games is
a
lot of games.
It is. It depends on how quickly the big three of San Antonio can return. But obviously the Lakers always get rolling towards the end of the season.
They're playing their best ball this season.
Playing their best ball because Powell and Kobe and Bynum, they're all balling outrageous, as you'd expect them to at this time of the year. So, obviously, it goes without saying that the Lakers are going to be a force to be reckoned with in the playoffs. And it's good to see them getting going at this point.
Now, the bottom of the West is interesting. There's about 4 to 6 teams that are in the mix for the final spots in the Western Conference playoffs. If for once, I think Portland might actually be the healthiest team of this bunch. Could that be true?
That's what I like to hear. As our viewers know, Josh and I both have Portland at 101-1 to win the NBA championship.
And so, they will.
And they will, of course. Of course they will. So we're hoping that Portland can remain healthy. They obviously have some guys like Marcus Camby and Brandon Roy who have had some health troubles in the past. So if they can stay healthy, they can certainly do some damage in the playoffs. I'm hoping for a Dallas matchup first round. I think that Portland can hold their own in that matchup, so let's hope so.
New Orleans is a game behind them. They are going to be missing David West for the rest of the regular season. Memphis is a game behind them in 8th. They're going to be missing Rudy Gay for the rest of the regular season. And then Houston is still 2 games out, and they've been playing good ball recently. They look to be fairly healthy. They've gotten Luis Scola back recently. Can Houston catch either one of these teams?
Well, Houston with Kyle Lowry, who's playing just outrageous brand of basketball right now, racking up fat statistical stat lines every single night, it seems, with lots of steals, assists, rebounds, points. I do think Houston could make a late run at an seventh, eighth spot with New Orleans and who else were we talking about?
Memphis,
struggling with some injuries. But, you know, it's going to come down to the last few games, I'd say, and the guy's got to come strong at the end of the season.
Skull has been back for how many games now?
It's been about 2 or 3.
And he's played very well, hasn't he? He's putting up some pretty big stat lines.
He struggled a bit last night.
Last night? I didn't see last night. What did he do last night?
I don't have the stats in front of me, Greg.
Of course you don't.
I do remember Kyle Lowry was figurehead on Yahoo Sports last night. So.
Oh, Greg, I hate you. Gregory!
Gregory. Just to interject that. Every time I watch New Orleans play basketball, I am not impressed. Not impressed
no.
whatsoever.
Chris Paul's having an off year, too. He hasn't been his best.
I would look for them to drop out. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, especially without West, who's an integral part of their team. They're missing that inside presence now.
Carl Landry was a big pickup for them at the trade deadline, and he's paying off big time now with West out. But I actually agree with you. They've looked very inconsistent all year. Do you think Phoenix and the Jazz are out of things in the West, Greg?
I don't think Phoenix has looked particularly impressive all year either. Utah, they always seem to have some heart, don't they? I always think, but
that's the old Jazz. Yeah, this new brand of Utah Jazz. No Devin slower. Harris is banged up as well. Paul Millsap just got back from the injury. As far as the Suns go, I think that triple overtime loss to the Lakers last week, I believe it was, really took a lot out of them mentally. So I do think that they're out of it. But I do like Houston. I think that they can make a push in that West. I would look for them to move in above New Orleans.
I completely agree. Utah is actually a little inner turmoil in Utah. Paul Millsap and Al Jefferson have had a little beef with Ty Corbin, the new Jazz coach. There's been a little bit of a disagreement with regards to playing time in recent games. So that's certainly a storyline to keep track of down the stretch.
Has there just a quick question for either of you, since you watch more basketball? Jerry Sloan, he left never for sure, but because of Deron Williams, right? Correct?
It had something to do with it.
That's the word on the street, yeah.
So he's gone. Were there ever any talks of him returning after Deron left, or Deron?
He was asked. I think he kind of laughed. Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Somebody asked him.
Oh, if he asked if he would return.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he said no, for the most part?
I don't know. The Jazz. I don't know if the Jazz asked him to come back.
I don't think the Jazz asked him.
But I believe a reporter asked him if it was in the realm of possibilities, and he kind of laughed off the question.
Yeah. I don't think that was ever a possibility after he resigned in the first place.
Just inquiring.
So the NBA season is dwindling down, and the NHL season is doing the same. Should we hand out some hardware, maybe, with a few games left? See how things may shape up with a few games left. Who do you think is in line for the Vezina this year? Who's going to be nominated? Who's going to win this thing?
Vezina, in my mind, is a four-horse race. But, you know, I'd also like to include Henrik Lundqvist in that conversation, as it does have 11 shutouts. But I think the four main competitors, you could say, for the Vezina would be Carey Price, Roberto Luongo, Pekka Rinne, and Tim Thomas. Tim Thomas is the guy I ultimately think will win, even though he's only played about 50 games this year. But I think Pekka Rinne is probably his closest competition. This is a guy who really doesn't have much of an offensive team in front of, offensively based team in front of him, compared to teams like Montreal and Vancouver, who have locked down the President's Trophy. But I think Tim Thomas has won the respect of the voters. This guy has a 1.96 GAA, 940 save percentage, and 9 shutouts. And he plays for a very good team in Boston, so I'd certainly give the nod to Tim Thomas.
Greg, who do you have for the Vezina?
I think when you look at it, Roberto Luongo has been helped out just a bit too much by Corey Schneider. And I believe, like you said, how many games has Tim Thomas played? Just about 50?
About 50, yeah.
So he's been helped out a lot by Tuukka Rask as well. So I may have to go, just to stir this up just a bit. I want to say Pekka Rinne, but I am thinking maybe Henrik Lundqvist sneaks up and takes some of those votes away and may come away with it, because, like you said, 11 shutouts this year, and his goals against is, what, like 2.24, it says. Yeah, that's pretty
substantial. You talk about offensively challenged team. The Rangers have been struggling in that respect a lot this year. Marian Gaborik has not been Marian Gaborik that we all know and love, or some love. But obviously they've had guys like Dubinsky and Callahan have solid years. But again, you look at Pekka Rinne in Nashville, he really doesn't have any consistent scoring in front of him. This is a guy who steals games on the nightly. So it's going to be an interesting race also to see even who's nominated. It's going to be a very tough decision for the voters, and I certainly look forward to seeing who they decide on.
Who do you have winning the Hart Trophy, AK?
Well, Corey Perry, who has made I don't have Corey Perry winning the Hart Trophy, unfortunately. The guy's made an incredible run in March, just as the Ducks have needed him. Guys, I think he's on a 10-game point streak, scoring 2 goals, as 5-game winners in the month of March. Lots of shots on goal. He's been carrying the Ducks, playing almost 25 minutes a night as well. But the Vancouver Canucks have been consistent all year, and a lot of that goes to Daniel Sedin. I think that's the guy who will be holding the Hart Trophy in the end.
Back-to-back Sedins?
Yeah, somewhere Brian Burke is smiling, sitting in his boardroom back there in Toronto.
With one button undone, his tie nice and loose. Right, Greg?
Oh, of course. No, never tie never done up, shirt never done up, all the way.
Hart Trophy, who you got?
As I'm not going to cheap out like AK, and I will take Corey Perry. Wow. I think I'm on a total high right now, the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, or Anaheim Ducks, sorry. Went a little vintage there. But I totally think everything about the Ducks is killing it right now. And Corey Perry, if he keeps it up, we've got a couple games left. Maybe he'll probably end up leading the league in goals.
Yeah, I agree
and
with
it's
that.
Feasible. Totally. He's tied right now with Stamkos with 44.
We talked about how crazy the Western Conference is in the NBA, and I don't even think we've seen anything like this in the NHL as far as the Western Conference, at least not over the last few years. Things are pretty jumbled up there with 7 teams jockeying for 5 playoff spots in the NHL Western Conference. Who's going to be left out of that mix?
Ooh, it's going to be close. I don't think Calgary's going to make it, that's for sure. They're on the outside looking in right now.
3 points back, I believe.
3 points out. And they don't have any games in hand as teams like the Ducks do. And Nashville. Nashville's in an 8th right now?
6th.
6th?
Yeah, I have Chicago.
It changes. Oh, yeah, Chicago.
Eighth, I believe.
Yeah. It changes every day. I think Calgary will be on the outside looking in. But a Vancouver-Chicago first-round matchup? Oof. That would be some sight to behold.
Calgary and Dallas are in 9th and 10th right now, Greg. Do you believe either one of those will make the playoffs?
Not a chance. I believe it will stay possibly pretty much the same it is right now. Maybe Chicago and Anaheim could flip spots. But, yeah, they're only a point apart. So I definitely don't think that Dallas or Calgary – like you said, Calgary's only got 5 games left. They started out with a lot of games in the first week or two, right? So they were behind from the start.
I happen to agree with that. But there is only 3 points separating Phoenix in fourth and Chicago in eighth. So there will be some jockeying with those positions there. But I believe things will stand pat as far as the actual playoff positions. 5 points separating?
5 points.
I guess things change a little. Things change every day. Night.
Especially in the Western Conference.
It's the NHL for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we have a minute left, guys. A minute. Anything else to throw out there? I miss Jimmy.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, Greg, thanks a lot.
But Greg has been an excellent, Jesus. Excellent stand-in for Jimmy. Just want to thank Greg for his efforts today. Greatly appreciated.
Well, first off, thank you for having me. It was awesome.
Greg has done an excellent job, of course.
Hey, anytime. You need me back? Maybe, you know.
Certainly the most fashionable member of the Sports Radio Jacks at this point.
Thanks to Greg Hood. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Hood. Many thanks to Rogers Sportsnet's MLB insider Shai Davidi for joining us. You can follow myself at JLou_sports on Twitter. Aaron Korolnik at Aaron Korolnik on Twitter. On behalf of Aaron, I am Josh Lewinberg. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to tune in next week. Just for fun, son, up to sundown, rolling around, see where the bad guys ought to be found and make them lay down. The defenders of the West, crushing all pretenders. And-